I would say that all students deserve to have highly trained educators, and that we know that there's a really strong correlation with our students who have highly trained teachers and their outcomes.
Yeah.
And so I would say that the one thing, if I could think about changing it, would be either the professional development opportunities, or, and I'm going to give you a list, which isn't what you asked for.
That's okay.
Professional development opportunities or teacher training in university training, and even to some extent addressing our teacher. It's not a shortage so much because there are bodies, but maybe our ability to recruit highly qualified teachers.
Yeah, and that goes back, that does all go back to money. Yeah. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Brighter Together podcast. My name is Janet Courtney, and my special guest today is Jill Dunn. Jill is the coordinator of tiered support at Rochester Public Schools in Rochester, Minnesota. Jill, thank you so much for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
So tell us a little bit about what's going on in Jill's world.
Yeah, so I'm currently serving as the coordinator of tiered supports at Rochester Public Schools in Rochester, Minnesota. Tongue twister there.
There you go, right?
And we are located in the southeast corner of Minnesota, so not too far from the Twin Cities, if you're familiar at all with the demographics or the geographics of the state. And I come to this role kind of from a little bit of a unique background. So, which is always kind of fun to tell my story a little bit of how I got here. So I'm currently supporting primarily the implementation of literacy, literacy interventions in our district. But I'm trained as a school social worker. So those two things feel a little disconnected, but I can make the connection for you. So I started many moons ago, it feels like, in the state of Iowa with Heartland AEA, the Area Education Agency, and started as a school social worker servicing students. Well, at the time it was birth through fifth grade in a couple of different districts. So the way it works in Iowa with the Area Education Agencies is they're an intermediate service co-op.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And they service multiple districts. So some of those specialized services are smaller rural districts don't have to pay for their own staff. So
yeah, because they never are going to need a 1.0 FTE, right? No way, no how. Yeah, I love that. Yeah. And it works really well. That model works really well.
It does. Yes. And there's some political things happening in the state of Iowa right now around those, but I won't get into that. anyway, so I started as a school social worker. And after doing that work for a few years, I came into it thinking I was like ready to save the world, right, in education, and then quickly learned that you can't come into it thinking you're going to save people, but thinking about how our students are really part of a larger system, that they're part of a family system, they're part of a community system, they're part of a school system, and really how does that system support or not support those students?
Right.
So I started with that and then ended up moving into a specialty role because I became a little interested in behavior and challenging behavior in particular, especially with our students who are on the autism spectrum. And so I moved into a specialty role at Heartland AEA where I became a challenging behavior and autism consultant and then continued to support students in classrooms, but more, I added more districts. So fewer students on my caseload, but I added more districts and added more travel area.
Oh, that's fun, right?
Yeah, right?
Iowa's not small either. I mean, it's not a small state.
It's not small when you think about, there was one day I realized that I went from the farthest northeast part of my territory to the farthest southwest part of my territory. And it was like an hour and a half drive from one to the next.
Yeah.
So anyways. So I did that work. And in that work, then learned that what kind of expertise I needed in the area of behavior, and an opportunity came up through a state grant at the time to become trained as a behavior analyst. I participated in that grant and worked with a couple of folks at the Department of Education, as well as some folks with the University of Iowa hospitals. And we did kind of a partnership on training people up on intensive behavior interventions and assessment. And as a result of that, then I became a board certified behavior analyst.
Are you still a BCBA?
I am.
Oh, yes, awesome. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep.
And so in that role, I really thought about like, okay, there's a lot of, I learned a lot about precision with interventions and really matching the need, doing some really deep root cause analysis and, mm-hmm. and that type of a role. And then my husband got a position here in Rochester. And so we decided to move our family and moved up here to Minnesota and started with Rochester Public Schools. And I started as a clinical social work trainee because I was not licensed as a clinical social worker in the state of Iowa.
Oh, okay.
You cannot become licensed as a clinical social worker if you were a school social worker.
Really?
And yeah, it was just licensing information. And so coming here to Minnesota, I was a trainee and actually then worked towards and got my clinical license in social work. So I'm also now a clinical social worker and LICSW in the state of Minnesota.
You must have quite a few little numbers and letters at the end of your name.
Lots of letters behind my name.
Letters, yeah. Lots of letters behind your name. Yeah.
Yeah. So, in the role that I started in Rochester, I started as the clinical social work trainee and was also doing some district-wide behavior coaching.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And doing a lot of my work primarily in special education. And supporting our students who were in self-contained classrooms or in self-contained schools, special schools. So we call them setting three or setting four, federal setting three or four in special education for emotional and behavioral needs.
Gotcha.
So I did that work for a little while. And then that brought me into the learning a lot about, again, back to kind of the school systems and thinking about how all of those things connect from one building to the next and from one program to the next and from one grade level to the next. I've learned that was a whole kind of new world to me because I was so focused before on just individual students.
Gotcha. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then I moved into a position that was a program management position, doing some of our more systems level work. At the time, we were developing a threat assessment process. And so developed that and did some oversight of our third party billing, just a more like managerial type of task.
Right. Okay.
And then the opportunity came for the coordinator of tiered supports.
I'm not surprised you moved. I would say that you just doing administrative stuff doesn't sound like it was your ball of wax.
You know, it was a really good learning experience.
Okay.
You learned a lot about federal documentation and, you know, there's like writing grants, processes there, that type of thing.
Yeah.
So then this opportunity opened up at the district, and then I moved into that. And at the time, we weren't really sure what this position was going to be. We knew that we had a high rate of identification of special education students, so something wasn't working, but we weren't really sure what. So knew that we needed to do some implementation of MTSS, multi-tiered mm-hmm. system of supports,
right?
But weren't sure what that was going to look like. We then got a new superintendent who said, let's start with literacy. So we dug in really deep to literacy. There's the connection, right? And so then I was like, well, if I'm going to dig into literacy, I have to learn everything there is to know about literacy. Mm-hmm. And so I have done lots of learning, and I feel like I have a little bit of imposter syndrome. I can talk the talk, but I don't know that I can walk the walk entirely.
I don't think that's true. I have a feeling you would be able to step in without. I mean, what you're talking about is impressive. Keep going. I'm loving it. So
yeah. So started to learn all things literacy, and also then really thinking about like whole school and whole district equity mm-hmm. and collaboration. And what does that look like for our students who move from one building to the next, who may have struggles or may have challenges, and what's the equity of their services, and trying to align all of that. So I feel like I come back to my social work roots when I say that literacy is a social justice issue and that all students and all adults deserve to be able to read, mm-hmm. and that literacy is the key to that.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So do you find that MTSS tends to be more towards the younger kids, or, you know, I mean, because it's a multi-tiered system of support, I get that, but in literacy, we tend to think about little kids, you know, like learning to read. So how does that translate into with literacy and the general population? Do you find it's more the younger ones than the older kids?
Yeah, I think our buildings and our educators, our staff who work primarily with our younger students, understand it better.
Okay.
Because they're so enmeshed in it every
day. And teaching, yeah.
But it is so critical for our older students as well. Mm. And especially in the age of COVID, coming out of COVID, and coming out of the stages of balanced literacy and some maybe not so great effective literacy instructional programs. We have kids who have moved through our system that haven't been able to read and haven't been able to read deeply.
Mm-hmm. And comprehension.
It limits their access to be able to really engage in knowledge. Mm-hmm. And it's not for any reason. They're not students with disabilities because they don't have a disability. They just haven't had proper instruction.
And they end up with a bunch of splinter skills, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. So when we think about our older students, I think it's just as critical as it is for our younger students.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's great that you guys have a system there that you can identify some of that without labeling them as special education. And especially you go to get into middle school and high school, the last thing a child wants to be is labeled. You know, they need help. We know they need help, but and sometimes they do need that label to get access to what they need. I get that. Please don't hear that. I don't want someone upset with me because I said that. But, you know, I love the fact that we are doing this, that this is and it sounds like, gosh, you're just really getting into and have focused on let's help them as soon as we possibly can. Right.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. And I think the thing that's fun about my story, maybe, I don't know, I think it's kind of fun and unique, is that through being able to continually embrace that change and, you know, mm-hmm. not staying stagnant, I was able, by keeping continuous learning and by continual growth, education in general and my work has stayed fresh and it has stayed energized. Right. Yeah. And so it's a way to find, I think sometimes we find educators and leaders who are kind of going through their day-to-day work and they've lost some of their passion and they've mm-hmm. lost some of their energy. And for me, this was a way that I could continually refresh that and keep that energy level high.
Yeah. As a therapist, as a speech pathologist, I've talked about this with schools a lot, you know, because if you work with the same students over and over year after year after year, you know, is that the person that should be doing the testing? Because I'm familiar, you know, so there's some of that testing that, you don't, you know, the establishing rapport, it's already there, you know, so those are good things. Right. But the flip side of that is there's that bias of, I already know this child and I know what they're capable of and I'm going to score, you know, not intentionally, none of us do that intentionally, but there's that, we expect them to perform and maybe give cues more than we should, or, you know, so having a fresh set of eyes, there are schools out there that we work with that specifically say, nope, you're the treating therapist. We don't want you doing the assessment because we want somebody else's eyes on that child. And it's great. I think it's one of those things where it's like, you kind of want to balance which is better. I don't think one is necessarily better or worse, just different ways. And I think that, having that opportunity to do something else and that freshness is really a piece of it. I guess that's where I was going with this, was just that freshness of looking at a child from a different lens, somebody else's lens. It does make a difference and it does keep it fresh and it does. And I've always found that when I collaborate with another professional on a student that I'm very familiar with and I listen, that's the thing though, you got to listen, right? You got to hear what they're saying, and not just go, well, that's not what I believe, but you know, and work then it's a collaboration. If it's truly a collaboration, I've always found it's like, there's something else that I can do to help this child that maybe I hadn't thought of before. So, yeah. Super good. That's really, really great. Awesome. Yeah. So what would you say is your biggest challenge right now?
My biggest challenge right now. So I think I mentioned it. It was a little bit of imposter syndrome.
Yeah. And I poo-pooed it immediately because I could.
But yeah, so I think that's probably one. I think I would say that the other thing is, as I'm learning one thing, it's hard to maybe let something else sunset and so kind of let it go. And so it's really hard to balance when I tend to have a lot of interest and I tend to move between my interests pretty rapidly. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, time is a resource and there's only so much time. And so to let something else go in order to take on something new is also a challenge. Thinking about moving MTSS work into the area of numeracy and math. Mm-hmm. That I will tell you is that was an area of challenge for me personally when I was a student. So to think about how I can support students with that is, I feel like my learning curve is going to be very steep.
What if every student could work with a therapist who brings not just credentials, but years of experience and wisdom to the table? At Lighthouse Therapy, most of our therapists have over 16 years of real-world experience. We don't just fill seats. Instead, we find therapists who've seen it all and know how to help. And every new therapist is paired with a mentor to help them guide them every step of the way, whether through virtual, hybrid or in-person delivery, your students are getting services that's thoughtful, experienced, and genuinely human. Visit lighthouse-therapy.com/brighter together to learn more. Yeah. Are you guys doing anything with therapy, like littles that might have an articulation issue or a sensory or a motor issue to begin with? Are you guys doing some of that as well?
Yeah. So our district does have speech therapist.
Yeah. I'm just curious because I'm a speech therapist and that's something we do as well, is
they also do some support of some of the literacy support because of the communication component of
it. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. And it's, none of us work in isolation for sure. You know, speech therapists work and we step a little bit into OT and OT steps a little bit into speech. And both of us tend to step a little bit into literacy because of handwriting and reading and articulation. And it takes a village. It really does take a village.
And I think that's also one of the things that's exciting about MTSS is it starts to really look at the student as a whole student.
Yeah, exactly.
And not necessarily siloed. And so knowing that oftentimes, and I think this, I would say this is true of our secondary schools as well, is that they're oftentimes very focused on the behavior because that's what's visible and that's what we can see. But when you really start to dig down to it, you can see that a lot of our students who might be struggling with behaviors or exhibiting behaviors, you know, those behaviors are happening for a reason. And often see a correlation between behavior and academic success.
Yeah, frustration.
And so if you start to look at that whole student, you can see, not only do we need to consider a way to support some positive behaviors, but we need to go back and address some of these academic skills because we haven't, you know, these are students who have found school to be challenging for a very long time. So is it any wonder that we see behaviors being exhibited outwardly? But if we only address one, we don't really fix the whole, we don't really address the entire problem. And so how can we view children and students as whole beings and not siloed into educational domains?
Right. And I've said this many times on this show, kids don't want to inherently be bad. They don't.
Exactly.
They really don't. And that is the love that I have for BCBAs and the work that you guys do, because you figure out what's causing the behavior. You know, it isn't just how do we get this kid to stop being this way? Make them stop. Right. Make them not be noisy or
compliant.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. And so, you know, figuring that out. And I have some great friends that are BCBAs as well, and have a couple, I don't know how many we have, but we have some that work for us here as well. And it's just, It's fascinating because I've been a therapist for 31 years and we didn't think about it that way when I started. So the shift that's happening, and MTSS is another piece of that shift to help to look at why, what's going on? Why is this child having these struggles and how can we help that child? And I love that that piece of it too is like looking at the individual, each individual child, and figuring out what's going on, because no single one of us is exactly the same either, right?
Yeah.
So it's exciting. Yeah. All right. I have one more question, and I try to ask this to most people. I don't get all of them, but I think it's a good one for you. And you cannot say money, because every school needs more money. They all need more money. Everybody needs money. We know that. But if you could, if you watched any of my podcasts, you're probably going to know this question, because I ask it fairly regularly and it's usually the last question I ask. So those of you that know this question, you know exactly what I'm going to ask. But if you could miraculously fix one thing, and the reason I ask it is it gets to the heart of where are you? What is it, that one thing that if you could just fix it, what would it be? It's a hard question. I'm not going to say it's not, but it's a good question.
It is a good question. And I wasn't even thinking money. Initially, I was going to say time, but I can't create that either.
You can't create.
That's a finite resource. There's only so much time in a day. If I could fix one thing, I would say that all students deserve to have highly trained educators. And that we know that there's a really strong correlation with our students who have highly trained teachers and their outcomes. Yeah. And so I would say that the one thing, if I could think about changing it, would be either the professional development opportunities, or, and I'm going to give you a list, based on what you asked for, but professional development opportunities or teacher training and university training, and even to some extent addressing our teacher. It's not a shortage so much, because there are bodies, but maybe our ability to recruit highly qualified teachers.
Yeah, and that goes back. That does go back to money. Yeah, it does. It really does. I mean, it's like we know in the United States that teachers are underpaid. They just are. I mean, and through no fault. And I won't get on my soapbox, because sometimes I do, but it's my platform. I can, right? But it's a tough job. And that's honestly, that's why Brighter Together exists, is because we want to give an opportunity to talk about there's amazing people out there doing amazing things. And one test score, when you judge a school based on one test score, you're missing the point. And that is why we spend this time and we talk and we're putting our money where our mouth is, because we really want this to be something where people hear people like Jill Dunn, who are doing amazing things in education. And that's what matters, you know, and stop telling us we're not doing our job, because we're fighting for these kids every day, every single day. Every day we get up and we go out there, and it's a battle that we're winning, that these kids and you know, sometimes it's a battle we don't even see the outcome sometimes, but boy,
exactly.
We're changing a generation every single time, every single day, every single child, one child at a time. So
yep, absolutely.
Well, Jill, where do people go to find more about you and about Rochester Public Schools?
Well, Rochester Public Schools is available. You can find it at rochesterpublicschools.org. And we do have an MTSS linked page there that you're welcome to view. To connect with me personally, you can find me on LinkedIn.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you. It's been a great conversation. I knew it would be from the beginning. So thank you for taking the time to spend with me talking about your passions. It's awesome.
Absolutely. Thank you again for having me. This has been fun.
Yeah. All righty. Well, I know the Brighter Together podcast is better because you're here, because we are brighter together.